Chicharito de lunes a jueves.
The Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. What's that sound? I know that music. Ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, welcome to the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, the greatest show on earth. And it's over. Yes. After 146 years. Oh dear, where can unhappy children run away to now? Where will all the creepy clowns work? The closing of Ringling Brothers Circus really is a juicy slice of Americana gone forever. Death-defying attractions, daredevils. Wow, 146 years is a hell of a run for any business. That circus outlasted railroads and oil companies, shipping lines, all kinds of Dow components. By the way, that march is entitled Entrance of the Gladiators. And how ironic that a gladiator theme became a theme for clowns and the circus. You know, those ancient Romans, they invented circuses. They invented mass entertainment, amphitheaters and gladiators and the whole thing, right? Personally, I was never big on circuses. Just as with school, it's those early experiences, the ones in the formative years, that color your opinions about so many things. My old man took us to the circus when I was really little, maybe 5, and he made a terrible mistake. He oversold it. He unwittingly raised my expectations to an unrealistic level. I'd seen the billboards and the commercials and, well, nothing about dancing elephants or lions jumping through flaming hoops really grabbed me. But then the old man mentioned the sideshow. What's a sideshow, Dad? Well, there's a fat lady and a strong man and a sword swallower, a tattooed man, and a giant. Woo, they have a giant? Now I was in, with both feet. I had to see the giant. I was absolutely fascinated by giants because of, well, Jason and the Argonauts or Clash of the Titans, but mostly because of the encyclopedia. As a kid, many homes had an encyclopedia, the best of which was the Britannica, but that was a smidge over budget. We had an encyclopedia that came from the supermarket, and it was great. It looked like hardcover comic books. There wasn't a photograph in it, just these nutty Crayola cartoonish illustrations. And the section on Greek mythology had a rendering of Cyclops. What kid could resist the weird allure of Cyclops? And in this rendering, Cyclops was so gigantic, he stood there in his tunic straddling mountain peaks on 2 different ranges. Holy shit, I'm gonna see Cyclops. So off to the circus we went. I think it was Madison Square Garden. It was packed. Walking in, I was so small at the time, all I could see was shoes and legs. And then some usher showed us to our seats, which were pretty good. And the 3-ring show began. Elephants, lions, tigers, a ringmaster, pointy chicks standing on horses as they rode around, jugglers, dozens of creepy clowns pouring out of a Volkswagen, trapeze artists, and then the big finale. The man gets shot out of a cannon. Even then, I wasn't impressed. I knew damn well he was spring-loaded and it was a puff of steam at the muzzle. Where's the giant, Dad? Oh, that's in the sideshow. Let's go. And so we headed down what I recall as a dimly lit hallway with a long, narrow, elevated stage on one side. And I'm thinking, how the hell can they fit Cyclops in here? Maybe they have him lying down. No way he could stand up. And we walked past the fat lady and the tattooed man and the alligator man, whom I thought would resemble a walking wallet, but no, he just had some nasty skin condition. Where the hell is the giant? And my old man and my brother and I stop in front of some tall, skinny guy in a suit. His skin is really shiny, like waxed fruit, and he looks, well, he looked unhealthy, kind of misshapen, like all his bones are out of kilter. And Dad says, "Here's the giant." What the fuck? This isn't Cyclops. This guy can't straddle mountains. The disappointment I felt was crushing. I was kind of pissed at the old man. And the giant looks at me and pulls a ring off his finger. It looked like a curtain ring. And asks if I want to try it on. I would sooner have tried on a rat's ass. I could not have been more repulsed. A lot of our culture comes out of circus. It's never really going away, right? Cirque du Soleil is just a human circus. Amusement parks, Disneyland, automated circuses, movies and TV, optical circuses. What do they all have in common? Passive entertainment versus engaged entertainment. There's a huge difference. We'll get to that a little bit later. And what about those death-defying acts? Very high appeal among the rubes and hooples. They want to see danger with a strong possibility of death. Magicians with buzzsaws and water torture cans. Crashes at the Indy 500. UFC bouts with plenty of blood. We like to see weird shit, don't we? In the early 1900s, there was a circus elephant named Mary who got pissed off at her trainer and stepped on the guy. Killed him. Well, the people of Tennessee were outraged and demanded justice. So after a speedy trial, a trial? Yes. Order in the court. Order in the court. Mary, have you anything to say for yourself before I pass sentence? All right, counsel for the defense, you may speak on her behalf. So they decide Mary has to die. Shoot her with an elephant gun? No. They get an industrial crane, wrap a chain around Mary's neck, and hang her. But then the goddamn chain breaks, so they had to hang her again. What the fuck is wrong with people? A few years ago, I took the family to Niagara Falls. I'd been there as a young kid and dug it. Man, have they fucked that place up. You can barely see the falls for the neon. And I was curious before going and did a little Googling. Seems that sometimes before the falls became a well-known destination, they were having trouble filling hotel rooms. So the city council, hey, isn't that always a bucket of assholes? No matter where you are, the city council. You know, a few years ago, I'm going to digress here, in Los Angeles, the LA City Council banned murder for a weekend. That's right. There were posters and news stories and candlelight vigils, like murder wasn't already slightly illegal. So these fucktard politicians banned it. And the gangs, well, after they stopped laughing, said, "Oh yeah? Let's do some drive-bys ahead of schedule." And the murder rate doubled that weekend. So whether LA now or Niagara Falls a century ago, city council is generally a holding pen for imbeciles. So the head Niagara idiot decides they need something to draw a crowd, something spectacular, something majestic, something no one had ever seen before. And he said, "You know, I know this guy. He has a rotting schooner. We can buy it for nothing. Why don't we slap some paint on it, huh? Couple of Jolly Roger flags and we'll shove it over the falls." And some other guy, a guy with much better promotional instincts, says, "Who the fuck wants to see that? We can do the boat thing okay, but how about we chain a bunch of screaming animals to the deck, then we push it over the falls?" And so they did. And some 15,000 spectators turned out to watch the death and destruction. The schooner was called the Michigan, a state known for bloodthirsty pirates. The deck was packed with ferocious animals, the posters said. Those were a couple of small bears, a buffalo, two raccoons, a dog, and a goose. They shove this ship out into the river. Everyone holds their breaths and their brownie cameras. The current takes the boat. It hits a rock and splits in two. This releases the bears, who manage to swim to shore. But the rest of them take the thrill ride to doom, presumably to thunderous applause.
That's entertainment.
Why do people love this stuff? Wild animals, after tens of thousands of years, we've figured out who really gets along with us, haven't we? Dogs, cats, horses, cows, chickens, parakeets. It's a pretty short list of domesticated animals. But we just have to fuck with the wild ones, don't we? Siegfried and Roy. One night that 600-pound white tiger just thought, enough. I'm sick of taking orders from a hairdresser. I think I'll just chomp your lacquered head like a martini olive. I've often speculated that Roy only lived because of the hairspray. Stuff probably tastes like shit. If you want to hear some of the funniest audio ever recorded, check out the Grizzly Man. Some guy from L.A., of course, decided he could speak bear. In fact, a special dialect of bear called Grizzly. And he actually talked some woman into living with him in a tent up there in Alaska so he could make a bear movie. He'd trudge through the tundra examining piles of grizzly shit. Oh, look, there are daisies in this scat. He's a nice bear. Probably not even a carnivore. One of those veggie bears. And for years, the Grizzly Man had the most incredible run of luck. He'd feed bears and wrestle with them and woof at them and chew in their ears. And those damn grizzlies did sort of behave like a Disney bear. And then one day, just like with Roy, one of those nice, daisy-eaten, cuddly veggie bears got over Grizzly Man's Jedi mind tricks and realized, what the fuck am I doing? I'm a bear, and I'm playing with this halfwit from L.A. And so you can hear the bear start to maul this guy, and his girlfriend screams at him, play dead. And he answers, I am. It's not working. Some people just refuse to accept animals the way they are. They're so accustomed to the anthropomorphization of them. There's a word for you, huh? And most of this was accomplished by Disney Studios. People just cannot acknowledge some animals' true nature. There was a huge selling VHS tape. I think it was called When Animals Go Wild. A stupid title. Should have been called Animals Being Themselves. It was a compendium of morons fucking around with animals who should never be fucked with. The scene that made me laugh the hardest took place between some old geezer and a moose. The geezer drives up to the general store and gets out of his pickup truck, and who's standing there like Bullwinkle? A moose that was probably 10 feet high at the shoulder. It's enormous. And this moron in a hat with flaps. He walks right up to this moose like he's asking directions to the nearest IHOP. And the moose rears back and crushes his skull with one hoof. It's Darwinian, isn't it? Coyotes are pretty common around Los Angeles. They're a protected species. Why? I don't really know. Maybe there should be a bounty on them. And people say, oh, but they were here first. We're invading their territory. And that's true. And the mosquitoes were here first, too. But nobody minds gassing those West Nile virus-carrying predators, do they? Nobody's protecting rats or lice or termites, either. They were all here way before we were. What's so special about a coyote? Maybe it's because Disney hasn't yet drawn any cute mosquitoes. And Warner Brothers got it all wrong. The Roadrunners are the bird brains. Coyotes are pretty damn smart. They'll send out one guy to tease and torment, even a big dog, a lab or a shepherd, get the dog to chase him until he arrives where the rest of the pack is waiting, and then they land on him. The sound is not pretty. I've heard it several times. The next day, you see the posters on the lampposts in the neighborhood. Have you seen Fido? Reward. If they want to see Fido, they need only look in the nearest coyote turd. One day, a guy moved in across the street. Marvin. Marv and his wife were nice people. She was kind of pointy. They were from somewhere in New England. They had no kids, but had a couple of little lap dogs, Shih Tzus or Pomeranians or something. But their names were Roscoe and Cuddles. And Marv would sometimes leave Roscoe and Cuddles on the patio, which was enclosed by a very porous wrought iron fence. And so I warned Marv, "Hey, Marv, there's a lot of coyotes around here. You might want to keep Roscoe and Cuddles inside when you're not out here with them." Never tell somebody something and, you know, just by the look on their face, they're not tracking with you. Marvin had a look of kind of condescension mixed with amusement on his mug, as if I'd just told him some ridiculous fish story. Well, a few days later, I'm leaving for work in the morning, and there's Marvin bent over in the street with a dustpan and brush, sweeping up pieces of Roscoe. He said, "Gee, I guess you weren't kidding about those coyotes." I wonder if some sociologist has done a study on costume culture in America, the whole cosplay concept. Where did that come from? You know, a lot of it's animal stuff. It seems that everybody in L.A. is in some type of costume. You dress, you walk, you talk, you're who you think you are. I was at a funeral recently. I turn around, and who's sitting three rows behind me in church? Wes from the Road Warrior. He's got the mohawk. He's got the feather and leather shoulder pads. He's got a look on his face that cries out for sedation. The only thing missing was Humongous behind him holding his leash. Where do these people come from? And where are they going? I don't know where they came from, but I know exactly where they're going. Whole Foods Market. Yes, a sick friend recently asked me to pick up some elixir for him, and I had my first peek inside a Whole Foods Market. And if anyone wants to know where the hippies went, that's where they are. Yes, and I'll close that loop for you a little later in the show. But back to death-defying acts. Outside of circuses in Vegas, there are three words that invariably preface every death-defying act. Hey, watch this. Somebody out there should design the Hey, Watch This app for every guy between 5 and 65, or maybe older. Once the app is on your cell phone, or Alexa, or Google Home, if it picks up the words, Hey, Watch This, it automatically speed dials an ambulance. Think about the hundreds of videos we watch of guys leaping into frozen swimming pools, or skateboarding off rooftops, or sticking their arms down the throats of crocodiles. You know those are the last words they said before losing consciousness. And if they regain consciousness, the first five words they most often hear upon waking are, "You are now a paraplegic." You know by now I'm not real enamored with government and subsidies, but shouldn't any male who attains the age of 21 without self-crippling or self-destructing be entitled to some kind of cash award? Just scroll back through your memories to all the crazy, insane shit you did that could have resulted in your death or dismemberment. It's staggering, isn't it? And if you haven't yet done that crazy shit, get busy. Why are we like this? Why is it that when our lives are in danger, we never feel more alive? Do women feel that way? I don't know. Females almost never say, "Hey, watch this." They say, "Hey, watch me," and they say it non-verbally. How? Well, with the tap-tap of high heels, or the toss of a mane of fuck-monster hair, or French-tip nails on the dashboard of your car. Subtle little signals that are difficult to ignore. Those signals can be just as life-changing as, "Hey, watch this," except when you regain consciousness, you're in a tuxedo saying, "I do." And sometimes it goes beyond the adrenaline kick. There's an element of ego in there which ratchets it up to another level. I once stumbled into a lecture. It was at a gym I belonged to, which had a couple of adjacent meeting rooms where wrinkles would play bridge or people hosted parties. And as I walked past, there's this big guy sitting in a wheelchair, addressing a crowd of maybe 50. He looked like he could put up 6 or 8 wheels on a bar, no problem. I stopped to listen for a bit. The guy was telling about being an adrenaline junkie. He went through all kinds of extreme shit, ice climbing and motocross and spelunking, but he was always looking for a bigger thrill. Then somebody turned him on to skydiving, and he tells how he progressed and would freefall from higher altitudes, and so on. One day he makes a jump, and something goes wrong with his parachute. The cords got tangled, and the chute didn't open fully, so his descent was rapid. According to him, more experienced skydivers have some way to manipulate these paracords and untangle them, and he's trying to do that. Meanwhile, he's wearing a perfectly good backup chute, which he does not deploy. Why? Because, well, some of his pals were already on the ground, and he didn't want to look as if he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't want to look uncool by deploying that reserve parachute. And then, at first I thought, wow, this guy must be Superman. Who the hell falls out of a plane and lives to tell about it? As I recall, he actually landed feet first, but his legs just telescoped. I felt bad for the guy. I really did, and it took big balls to admit he'd been the architect of his own disabling. Because sooner or later, fate's gonna punch every one of us in the face and knock us flat on our ass. Might be a nasty diagnosis, or a runaway tractor trailer, or maybe you're just walking down the street and some asshole drops a piano on your skull. And as shitty as you'll feel, if you're lucky enough to feel anything, you can't possibly feel as shitty as the guy who self-destructed, like the skydiver. I suppose the correct nomenclature for his sport would have been dirt diver. When I was a kid, there was a neighborhood character, Mike the Mighty Greek. Nice guy. He always had some baklava and spinach pie at Easter. I never got the lucky dime in the mystery slice, but I did see one unhappy diner break a tooth on his 10-cent prize. Mikey's wife always had a fresh pot of coffee on the stove, and the place was like a corner bar, but without the booze, jukebox, and drunken assholes. Mikey was one of those guys who seemed to know not a little about everything, but a lot about everything. And being Greek, he had a serious Jones for philosophy. And he once asked me what I thought drove men. Chevrolets, I answered. No, my wise-ass student, guess again. Well, being maybe 18 at the time, he saw my next guess coming a mile away, which was reproduction. Wrong again, said Mikey. It's suicide. And damned if he wasn't right. We may not be as openly and foolishly complicit in our own undoing as the uncool skydiver, but one way or another, many of us do manage to dig our own graves, don't we? Too much food, booze, cigarettes, TV, the wrong girlfriend, the wrong wife, too many wives, too many kids, overwork, black diamond ski runs, high abuses. Oh, what smartass named that bike. High abuse yourself with this donor cycle. And men reign preeminent in the art and science of self-destruction. There are a few Amy Winehouses out there, but if you're in doubt, just check the population figs, or better still, take a fast stroll through a nursing home. If you got a thing for wrinkles, you won't have to fight any guys for the old lady's favors. There just aren't many guys in any of them. And so here's a question. Has any woman in the history of the world ever done anything like the dirt diver? Odds are no, or damn few. Chicks just seem to have a stronger sense of self-preservation and don't care if they look uncool pulling the reserve parachute lanyard. They want to live. We want to look cool. At some point, the male suicide quest is superseded by the self-preservation quest. And that usually happens after long hospitalization or the passage of time. And the self-preservationists are a comedic goldmine. Want to get some belly laughs without a cover charge? Head for your nearest Whole Foods market. They should rename those joints the Ponce de Leon Search for Immortality Zone. They're just crawling with ancient hippies seeking magical, life-extending nutrients. Guys with 27 white hairs pulled into a dork knob. Aisle after aisle of herbs and vitamins and desiccated monkey nuts and chelated giraffe menses. I just want to get on the PA system and tell them, attention, Whole Food shoppers, you're gonna die Maybe not today or tomorrow, but you can eat seaweed and krill oil till your turds are identical to Free Willy's. But sooner or later, something's gonna go pop in your skull, and presto, you can finally hang with a real Beatle. It just won't be Paul or Ringo. Not too long ago, when the circus came to town, my kids had to go. Why? Because the other kids had seen it. It wasn't Ringling Brothers, it was a smaller circus, but I took them. And I managed their expectations, but damn if it didn't disappoint once again. This one was held in a big striped tent, just like in the old movies, an unair-conditioned tent. And after about an hour in the Southern California summer sun, the heat and the stench of elephant shit was so bad, the circus should have been charged with cruelty to customers. But I noticed something more after that trip to the circus with my kids, and trips to Disneyland, or the Ice Capades, or the movies. And you'll see the same thing with adults at Disneyland. Once they debark the Matterhorn or Dumbo or the puke-inducing teacups, they all have the same look on their faces. Dissatisfaction. Ennui. A look that says, now what? Like a junkie whose last fix is worn off and needs a hot spike full of China White. And I'll bet they had the same look pouring out of the Colosseum in ancient Rome. Even after having watched some gladiators fight to the death or lions ingest a few Christians. Because it's all passive entertainment. What's more fun, to watch a ball game or play in a ball game? Listen to music or make your own? Watch a surfing movie or catch a wave? Of course, it's great to veg out in front of a screen and be entertained. Everybody needs that. But over time, if we can get our kicks and achieve something while we're at it, it's way more satisfying, isn't it? Hey, I got to attend to a little business here. I have a take-no-shit dojo question written to me by Kevin, a dude who finds himself facing a not uncommon situation at work. He's in the construction business, started as a kid sweeping floors, and now has worked his way up the ladder to a pretty high rung for a dude in his early 20s. What's the problem? The guys he used to work with, shoulder to shoulder, are now reporting to him, and he's having a hell of a time getting them to follow his directives. Kevin asks, is it me? Is it because I'm younger? Or are the guys generally assholes? Well, Kevin, I'll speculate the answers are no, yes, and yes. I've been in your position, actually fairly recently. I was called by an old friend to salvage a project that was circling the drain. Trouble was, they didn't fire or transfer the jackass who'd been fucking things up for months. You could cut his resentment with a knife. He was an obstructionist, but also a world-class kiss-ass. Finally, I caught him actually sabotaging some of my work. That's when they spanked him and put him in a corner. Now, your situation is a bit different, Kevin, one that the Roman military figured out thousands of years ago. And larger, smarter corporations often follow the lead of the military. They rarely promote from within or locally. Otherwise, it's a recipe for disaster. Those guys who now report to you are thinking, who the fuck is this kid? Why is he better than me? Why should I take orders from him? And really, it's tough to blame them. So in the military and bigger corporations, they always bring in some UFO, a guy from another city or base. The new guy they don't know isn't regarded as familiar Kevin. It's Mr. So-and-so. Because while familiarity breeds contempt, unfamiliarity breeds respect and wariness. So what's the fix? Well, your boss should have had a sit-down with these guys well before your promotion and explained to them that you were the new boss and they should follow you as they do him. If that hasn't happened, I would suggest you ask him to hold that type of meeting. If he won't, you have to handle it on your own. Now, groups, even small groups, usually have a leader. Determine who the alpha dog is and have a sit-down with him over lunch or a beer. Let him know how much you are depending on him to help you get things done. He's probably power-hungry already, so if you can give him a taste and some hope that he can follow in your rise through the ranks, you may be able to flip him from an adversary to an advocate. If there is no alpha dog, You'll have to talk with them one by one. But do not address this matter with them as a group. Groups behave in a very different manner than individuals. Let us know how it works out, Kevin. We're always here for dojo members. I want to give a special shout-out to the fantastic Mariano, who, out of his boundless generosity, set up a Reddit page for That Larry Show. And to all of our listeners and Patreons, we'll be getting those bonus rewards out to you shortly. I know many of you have cheated death in ways we can't even imagine, and I want to hear about it. So email us at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or call the dojo at 302-71-LARRY and tell us about your daredevil escapades. We'll include the best ones in a show, maybe even have listeners choose the greatest maniac of all. If you like what you're hearing, 5-star us on iTunes. Thanks for stopping by the Take No Shit Dojo, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. See you next time, and remember, take no shit.
There's only two types of people in the world. The ones that entertain and the ones that observe. Well, baby, I put on a show kind of girl. Don't like the back seat, gotta be first. I'm like the ringleader, I call the shots.